Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From KQED.
Think we're good to go? All righty, let's do it. This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, why are voters of color shifting toward Republicans, including Donald Trump? Black, Latino, and Asian American voters have long been solid Democratic Party voters, but polls and voting trends show that is changing. The question is why, and how might this trend affect the 2024 elections? My guest is Bracton Booker. He's a national political correspondent for Politico, where he covers the intersection of race, politics, culture, and power. Bracton, welcome back to Political Breakdown.
Thanks for having me.
Well, give us the big picture, Bracton, if you would, a little bit of specificity on what we are seeing among Black and Latino voters in particular.
I think what you're seeing is there are more options. And I think a lot of voters are now taking stock and saying, like, is the Democratic Party the best party for me and for my family and for my voting patterns? Like, I think they're, by and large, Black, Brown, Asian voters, they are all still very strong cohorts within the Democratic apparatus. Like, we're not talking about a huge realignment where we're going to see 80% of Blacks or 80% of, or 75% of Latinos all of a sudden shift. But when we're talking about elections that are going to come down to the margins, they're really going to come down to a handful of swing states, that's where you're going to start to see voters of color really make a difference. And this is really about a turnout, right? If Democrats can land their message and get people to articulate that message and not just say, hey, let me just read this laundry list of accomplishments that the administration likes to roll out, but actually connect how these policies are benefiting families and benefiting communities of color, I think Democrats have a stronger position. They're in the poll seat in order to win some of these swing states. But short of that, that is where you're going to start seeing some of these fissures emerge and where you're going to start to see people make some calculated decisions about maybe they will give the Republican Party a try. Or what we're really not talking about enough is how well a third party candidate might position themselves, because people are just so fed up with both political parties.
Well, and that's kind of what I want to ask you about, because at the very beginning there of that answer, you said, oh, look, we have more options. But it's not just that they're considering, say, a Cornel West who's running for president or a Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We're also seeing, like in 2022, you know, congressional candidates doing better with Republicans and so on. So when you say we have more options, what do you mean?
Saying that, yes, that the parties, but the parties themselves are making the argument that they need to bring voters in. And what I'm saying is voters are demanding more from their parties, and therefore they are being a little bit more specific on what it is they feel like they need to be going to the polls for. Look, I think the Israel-Hamas situation has painted this picture pretty clearly. I was in Milwaukee just a couple of weeks ago ahead of their primary. And Democrats are the ones that are showing out to vote in these protest votes for these uncommitted votes, or in Wisconsin, it was called the uninstructed vote. Now, these are Democrats that are trying to voice displeasure with the president for his handling of the situation, and also continuing to send money to Israel to fund the war there. And so if that block of voters ends up turning on Biden or not showing up for Biden, that spills doom for him in a state like Wisconsin, because that uninstructed vote got double the amount of the margin of victory that Biden had in 2020. So this is what I'm talking about. There are options here, and folks on the Democratic Party are exercising those options to try to pull the administration to their policy points here.
I'm wondering to what extent this is over the economy versus other things, other social issues or immigration. You mentioned the war in Gaza as certainly being really relevant, especially, I think, for younger voters. But, you know, usually the economy is top of mind.
I mean, the economy is always going to be top of mind. That's how a lot of voters are going to make their decision, right? But the economy is encompassing of a lot of things. Someone's personal economy may also include what the president was in Wisconsin earlier this week talking about, which was student debt relief, right? So if you are feeling like you cannot get ahead because you are underwater with student loans, that may be something that may lead you to vote for the Democrats. But if you are someone who says like, hey, I paid my student loans off and now you're giving breaks to younger folks, that is not fair to me. And why should I then as a taxpayer bear the burden, right? So there are lots of policies that on the surface Democrats could get behind, but there are a lot of people saying like, hey, what are we doing here? These policies do not align with where I think the country should be going. Another issue is immigration. Immigration is really dividing Democrats and liberals, particularly how I'm hearing from a lot of folks about what's going on in cities like Chicago, cities like New York, where migrants are showing up on the footstep of these cities. Cities then have to fund where these folks are going to go. And people are calling these kind of wraparound services that a lot of migrants are getting. They're saying, well, look, Black and brown people have been here long before the migrants showed up, but they are getting kind of top-notch facilities and getting prepaid credit cards to pay for a lot of things. I am not down for that, and therefore I'm going to vote against Democrats this coming election. So it's very complicated, and yes, the economy is one thing, but the economy is encompassing of a lot of things here.
So we hear the president, as he did in his State of the Union address, emphasize that Black unemployment, the rate of Black unemployment is at a historic low, hasn't been this low in decades. So are you saying that that's fine, but, you know, there are all these other things, that message that he is trying to emphasize isn't breaking through?
I'm saying that is a fair talking point and a fair data point that the administration is highlighting. But if you've never been employed, but you still feel like you're working really hard but not getting ahead, that data point does not land for you very well. I think what the president and what Democrats and his allies need to do a better job in, this is what I'm hearing from voters, is you have to then connect that to people's personal lives and how that is benefiting them. It's a great talking point to talk about Black unemployment and being down. But if you cannot connect the dots about how this has improved communities, or you cannot talk about how the next 4 years is really going to kickstart Black economic growth, closing the Black wealth or home ownership gap, that's when I start to see some of these policies kind of fall flat with a lot of voters, because they cannot paint a picture for themselves about what the future looks like. And contrast that with Trump. Look, there are a lot of folks who point to the economy feeling better. They also talk about the stimulus checks that they received. Now, yes, Biden also got that, but Biden's name was not on the checks. And so a lot of people don't give him the same kind of credit that they give Trump. So it's really about the whole messaging apparatus that Democrats have to really fine tune in the closing months of this campaign.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, more of our conversation about race, politics, and the 2024 election. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of The Bay and beyond, with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We're talking about a shift to the right among voters of color, especially Black and Latino voters. My guest is Bracton Booker. He covers national politics for Politico. I'm wondering what you're seeing, what you're thinking, what you're hearing, Bracton, about these third party candidates, especially Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Of course, the Kennedy name is golden in communities of color. He was very close with farm workers and Cesar Chavez when he ran for president, his father, I should say, in 1968. Also, made a big issue around addressing poverty in the United States, which attracted a lot of Black votes. To what extent is that accruing to the advantage of his son, whose politics are completely different?
I think that's a big deal there. I mean, the Kennedy name is strong in American politics, and it's a growing strength, I would say, as the names of Biden and Trump take on their own baggage for folks outside their bases, right? And so you're not going to see a ton of overlap of people who are supporting Biden and Trump, but you may see some middle ground of folks who want to say, well, I'm fed up with both of these major political parties. And let me just give this other guy who has some charisma. I don't think people give Robert F. Kennedy especially enough credit for it. He is charismatic. If you are just tuning in and watching some of his campaign speeches, he's gone and done like sitting down in a barbershop with a rapper Killer Mike and having a discussion about what reparations look like for Black Americans. So the fact that a presidential candidate is willing to go and have those conversations. Now, I will tell you, Robert F. Kennedy didn't really give any real in-depth policy prescriptions on how he would change that. But the fact that he's going in there and listening to someone who's considered a pillar in the community, someone who has some celebrity, that does give him some gravitas in some areas. And look, I think people are like I said, fed up with both political parties. So they're just like, maybe we can do something different. There's got to be something different. And, you know, Robert F. Kennedy is slightly younger than both Biden and Trump. And maybe that's an appeal, too.
Just a kid at age 70 in this field anyway. I want to ask you about immigration and border issues. You know, Democrats have really pushed for issues like citizenship, for Dreamers, the young folks who came here illegally as kids with their parents. But they really have nothing to show for it. I mean, you know, Dreamers are still stuck in limbo, and, you know, farm workers, many of them still don't have any kind of legal status in this country. To what extent is some of this shift that we're seeing, do you think, just kind of a frustration of, you know, hey, they keep making all these promises, but not really delivering?
I think that's true of both parties there. I mean, Democrats just happen to have the White House and have the Senate right now. But even when they had full control of the trifecta, having the control of the White House, the Senate, and Congress, like, there was no real legislation that was passed, right? But I think what you're seeing is, like, because conservative media especially is making such a big deal about the border crisis, right? Calling it a crisis, calling it a threat to, you know, American way of life. That is really putting the issue front and center for a lot of voters. And certainly the images of folks coming across the border has really kind of crystallized that issue for a lot of Americans. So it's also putting a lot of pressure on, what does the Biden administration do? Like, my Secretary Mayorkas is supposed to be impeached this week, but I don't think that's going anywhere. But Republicans this week are really trying to keep that issue front and center. And as long as Republicans are playing offense on this and putting Democrats on defense, it does put up a mirror. Like, well, what have you got? What have you done? What have you gotten to show for your time in office? And I think it's a really hard question for Democrats to answer at this point.
You know, many Black and Latino voters are religious, especially older ones. And I'm wondering if you know, many of them, you know, maybe what we're seeing is that many of them feel like Democrats have gone too far on things like abortion or transgender rights or, you know, LGBTQ equality.
I've had this conversation quite a bit with folks. This is not something that would be discussed really like in an open forum if, say, like the president were to come and have an appearance at a church on a Sunday, right? But certainly in one-on-one conversations, I do believe that there are folks who are more conservative leaning, especially those with strong religious ties, about, well, maybe Democrats have gone too far trying to be too inclusive or trying to extend rights to certain subgroups, right? And I think that is certainly a conversation that is probably being had a lot more in private than a lot of people would like to admit. But I do think that is playing somewhat of a role. I don't think it's an overarching theme. I don't think it's like a top tier issue for a lot of folks, but that is a concern for some people.
On the flip side, we saw this week the Arizona State Supreme Court sort of using a law from 1864 to uphold an almost total ban on abortions. We had the decision in Alabama on essentially banning IVF treatments until the state legislature there did something about it. Does that not have an impact? I mean, for many Americans, especially women, are saying that goes way too far, and it's driven turnout for Democrats in 2022. How do you see that playing out among voters of color?
Well, look, I do think that the abortion issue has proven to be a real motivating and galvanizing issue for Democrats, and it's. They've been able to really message on that, saying, well, Republicans are trying to take away your rights. And I will say that, you know, for a lot of issues, Democrats don't have like a concise message like that. But on abortion, they certainly have the boilerplate message that can be repeated, can be put on yard signs and on protest signs, right? As far as a galvanizing issue for voters of color, sure, I think that does help with some. But I mean, I think the issue of schools, I think the issue of crime, I think the issue of going back to the economy are probably going to be a lot more of a driving force for communities of color who, when they're trying to think about, okay, if I'm really truly on the fence about voting again for this president, what do I do? Has he done enough? I think those are going to be the issues that folks are going to have the conversations around the kitchen table, saying like, look, can we personally afford another 4 years of President Trump? President Biden, if we feel like he can continue to make our lives better and create more opportunities, then yes, I think that will be a reason to vote for them. But if people are voting solely on the feeling of economic prosperity that was realized under a President Trump's time in office, I do think that's going to sway more than a handful of voters. But again, it comes down to what's going to happen in some of these swing states here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think as far as the economy goes, certainly there have been way more jobs created under President Biden, but it's the interest rates, it's the inflation, I think, that sort of overlays everything in this case. I want to come back to, you mentioned crime and public safety. And of course, after George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, Democrats, there was a contingent of folks who were saying defund the police. And I know that wasn't anything that Joe Biden said or Kamala Harris or, there were a few, candidates and elected officials who said that. But
sure.
I'm wondering,
sure,
the extent to which you think that sort of framing of the police generally and law enforcement has affected the way, say, Black or Latino voters view the Democratic Party.
Sure. I think we're hammering on this theme of messaging. I thought that really coming out of 2020 and the racial reckoning year that was 2020, that Republicans actually did a really good job trying to take back some of the narrative about where policing was. I mean, there were folks on the far left and the progressive wing of the party that were advocating for defund the police, but also did not go into the nuance about what defund the police was, right? Defund the police was talking about reallocating funds that were going to police departments and going to some of these wraparound services. But again, that does not fit well on a bumper sticker on a campaign sign. So when you're able to like kind of turn the narrative based on a phrase, then you put Democrats again back on the offense, trying to like, oh wait, let me explain this. But to your bigger point, I think that Biden ran on a platform of coming in and championing police reform on a federal level. And look, he was seeking a bipartisan deal that Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey and Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina and Karen Bass, who's now the mayor of LA, that we're all trying to have those conversations about bringing federal legislation to the floor. And that never made it out of their backdoor meetings there, because there was really no agreement and probably never really was going to be an agreement about how to pass federal legislation to kind of rein in local policing. And so the Biden administration, to their credit, they have done a number of things on the federal policing side, but like, you don't really hear Democrats leaning into their wins on law enforcement or on policing, because that argument can be picked apart pretty quickly about like, so what happened? Well, the conversations fell apart.
Yeah.
And that is not really a winning message here.
Yeah.
So we don't really talk about that as much. And I think a lot of voters do remember that, especially if they were out protesting during the COVID year.
Last question. What impact do you think Kamala Harris will have on this election, especially among voters of color and younger voters as well? She, of course, was added to the ticket in 2020 by Biden after he promised to appoint a woman or to name a woman as his running mate. Do you think, is she a secret weapon or is she more of an albatross, do you think?
It really is. Depending on who you're asking, it's in the eyes of the beholder, right? There are a lot of folks who certainly think of the vice president, trailblazer, historic, and also feel like she is being underutilized as a weapon for this campaign, right? Certainly she has found her footing on talking about reproductive rights and making sure that women maintain access to this. And so she's really kind of carved out a lane as one of the administrations and the campaign's most articulate spokespeople on this issue. But a lot of people see her too as not being able to really, she has not lived up to her full potential, because for whatever reason, the Biden administration won't put her front and center on a lot of things. Like, she's had immigration added to her portfolio and tried to find the root causes of why migrants were coming. That was never going to be something that she could solve in a short amount of time, even in a full 4-year administration. And then she is also being used by her Republican opponents as the boogeyman, right? As the person, like, if you elect Joe Biden, you know you're actually electing of the president, the next president, Kamala Harris, which has been used effectively in certain Republican circles. So I do think she's a sick weapon as far as getting the Democratic base out. But as far as like pulling maybe independent voters or pulling some Republicans who are on the fence about Trump, I am not as clear-eyed as to whether that she is a secret weapon there. So it really depends on how they continue to utilize her to see if she is going to be a formidable force in this the remaining months of the campaign.
All right. Bracton Booker covers national politics for Politico. Bracton, thanks so much for joining us.
I mean, this was fun.
That is a wrap for Political Breakdown for Wednesday, April 10th. We are a production of KQED. Our engineer is Syl Muller. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Hi there. I'm Rund Abdelfattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.